Dang, that is a great song. Like, I want to know the people that wrote and recorded that. Like, I want to be friends with them.
Steven, you made me a promise. You made me a promise that you wouldn't run off on a rabbit trail. And it's literally 10 seconds in. And you're like, who wrote that song? Who wrote it, Steven?
I did. It was me.
Ladies and gentlemen, no complainers. Welcome to our first inaugural episode of No Complaints. We've planned out movies to watch in this series we're calling.
Forgotten films.
Yeah, so any forgotten film that we're. This is going as well as it did whenever we did this the first time around.
Yeah, if you wouldn't think this is like, what is this, season three,
Yeah,
four,
I don't know how we would classify the seasons. I think at one point we called
season?
one like 2.5 or something like that.
Yeah,
Let's just call it season three.
sure. This is season three. Welcome to season three of No Complaints Podcast.
Yeah, so we're diving into forgotten films this time around, and we've made a promise, a solid promise to each other. A solid, what the heck am I saying? We
I'm
made a
sorry,
s
Mr. Frodo. Keep going, keep going, keep
we
going.
So we made a solemn promise to each other to stay on topic, on task. But you know what? I'm just going to be honest. It ain't going to happen. So I hope you stay along for the ride with us. So we picked out 20 or so films over the next year or so that we're going to go over. We kind of started this, honestly, with the Christmas series that we did.
Yeah, we did.
These unsung heroes of the holiday genre. And so that's
Yeah.
essentially what we're doing here. Maybe we'll call it the unsung heroes. I don't know. We should probably
Unsung
decide
hero.
this
I like it.
before we
Yeah.
record.
You know, it's like the idea is some of them are they're underrated, but then others are just good films that just maybe they came out at the wrong time. We don't talk about them anymore, and we think we should. And so there's some great gems in here we're excited to dive into, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. It's gonna be
I feel
good.
like that's a passion of ours, whether it's advocating for The Last Jedi or me trying to bring forth classics to our common culture at this point. I feel like both of us have this inner deep longing for people to see films that they haven't seen before and look at them in a new way.
Yeah, finding the depth and joy in cinema.
You got it, except you got it
Yeah.
reversed. It's joy and depth, Stephen. Joy and depth.
Finding that deep joy in cinema.
So we're starting off this time around with a classic of the Lancaster household, Force 10 from Navarone. It is the follow-up to The Guns of Navarone, and it was written by Alistair MacLean, who wrote novels much like the Tom Clancy novels, like Jack Ryan, essentially. It is one of the first films that came to mind whenever I thought about this unsung hero, this forgotten film. So the story covers a World War II band of brothers, so to speak, who are tasked with blowing up a bridge and finding a spy, a double agent behind enemy lines.
There's that Tom Clancy factor
There it is.
right
It's
there.
right there. So you had never seen this film.
I had no.
I wanted to know, first off, like, what were your thoughts of the film overall? Walk me through your emotions of watching this film.
So I, believe it or not, had actually heard of The Guns of Navarone
Oh, wow.
because growing up, my dad, like,
Congratulations, my friend. I'm giving you a golf clap in this
well,
moment.
thank you. A golf clap,
If you
gentle
hadn't
golf clap.
heard of the Gregory Peck, David Niven classic, I just don't think you deserve to be a podcast host with me.
Right. My father taught me about Gregory Peck. So anyway, you know, I knew about that one. But at the same time, like, it's very much one that I had not even heard of until you brought it up, which is insane to me.
And just trying to think about all the different things that this film is, I feel like one of the things that it does really well is it kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat in terms of what's going to happen next. And
Yes, definitely.
I like that. It's a lot of action-based sequences, a lot of stunt work. I really wanted to hear kind of what your thoughts on like the story and like plot and just kind of how that comes together into kind of a seamless whole, given that it's a follow-up to this absolutely amazing classic with Gregory Peck and David Niven in it.
So I think one key characteristic of a good sequel is that it can stand alone on its own as a story. And while these are existing characters for sure, you mentioned Tom Clancy earlier and this whole Jack Ryan idea. It really is similar to that in that you have different actors coming in to play these roles, going on a different mission. So there's a lot of overlap in that, like, there's this shared history, but at the same time, your focus is on the here and the now. And so we've got this story where we just know that Mallory and Miller are compatriots. They know how to work with each other. And so they're sent back. They're looking for the Nazi spy that betrayed them in the Guns of Navarone. So you've got this added weight of vengeance, you know, over the entire storyline. And then you get a very different take on Barnsby, which is, I think, one of the interesting things about this film is that, if I'm not mistaken, Barnsby in Guns of Navarone is Australian. And this one, we've got a take on him where he's American. So you get this nice little mix of Brits and Americans, you know, going behind enemy lines, and things don't go the way they expect. But we already know the stakes are high because we've already experienced betrayal in the previous film. We already have seen several characters die very quickly into the film. We know that really anything can happen, and you can't trust anyone, which is, I think, like, the pro of this whole genre, is that it builds the stakes up so high as a spy thriller. If it played out as a war film, I feel like it might have been a little bit more straightforward.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it covers a lot of ground. Like, you have time in England, you have kind of these intercut scenes with the original movie together, and then they're establishing these new characters. It's filmed on location a lot, and it really kind of goes down into the side of the war that we don't really get to see a lot. And I feel like that's one of the advantages of this film, is that instead of in the trenches, instead of this kind of grandiose theme that you see like in Battle of the Bulge and some other films like that, you get to see this more spy thriller set against World War II, and also kind of in the Eastern European side of the war, which I feel like is a bit underrepresented.
Yeah, you don't see that much.
And I just thought that that was a very interesting take. And then while all that's happening, while they're trying to destroy this bridge to keep the Germans from going, like you said, there's this whole extra plot that becomes most of the movie, finding out who was the person who betrayed them in the Guns of Navarone. And this character, oh my gosh, Nikolai, I was almost forgot it, but it came right to me as I was saying, oh my gosh, I can't remember. Oh, there it is. And Nikolai, and this very interesting subplot of how they really came to know that this was the same guy. There's some back and forth. And I like films that do that. Things just go wrong. It's almost in some way comical that, like, everything's going wrong. Their plane gets hit. This thing happens. Carl Weathers, who we haven't mentioned at all to this point, he and Barnsby get at it quite a bit. There's this one turning point in the movie where Weathers just turns on everybody and is just like, I'm not going anywhere until somebody tells me what's going on. And they don't even know what's been going on this whole time. And, like, he wrongfully assumes that they're just not telling him because of something about him. And then you hear Barnsby treat him with a measure of respect and say, this is what's going on. It's a complete turn. Harrison Ford literally says the exact same thing that he said to him moments before that made him super angry. Now they understand one another in a unique way. I really appreciated the way that the film handled kind of their character development.
Yeah. So, like, honestly, what I was feeling as I was watching a lot of the racial tension addressed in the film and just the way that it was handled, it very much embraced what was happening in the culture. And if you think about most war movies that you've seen, especially depicting World War II, you don't see a lot of black representation. You don't really see those stories told, especially in the older films. And I feel that was one thing about the 70s. Nowadays, we're getting so many stories that I had never even heard about, of the Black Panther movement and just civil rights and just what that looks like in the 60s and the 70s. And you can see it in the DNA of this film, even having, you know, Weaver, Carl Weathers character. And it's not even just like a token black character. I mean, they go there. They address it. It's the unflinching look at what discrimination and racism looks like, not just on, you know, the Allied army side, but even when they're in Europe, in Eastern Europe, you know, what the kind of treatment that he's getting and what that's doing to him. I feel like that's maybe something that was brought to the table by the director, Guy Hamilton, which we've not talked about yet, but he's most famous really for the Bond films that he directed.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is a lot here that you can pick from a Bond film. It very much feels like that at times.
And it's not a Bond film by another name, right? Like, it's not. Right. It does really have this really deep ingrained, who do you trust, large set pieces. It was beautiful to watch for me.
Yeah. It really was. And I think it's something, as I was kind of thinking about the Bond element, if you will, there is a very specific focus on the women when they enter the room, and then the way that his filmmaking kind of focuses on the interactions between the men and the women. But without giving too much away, the women are fairly important to the plot.
I felt like that was a much more pivotal role than you would you would classify as a normal Bond girl, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah.
There's a key moment when she sees Nikolai, this person who she's seen before. She figures out what's going on. You're just cheering for her to get to the people before he does. Yeah. And it's just a very emotional moment for me of like wanting the truth to be known and wondering if it's going to be known. And so, yeah, like the way that they handle like their whole platoon dying, like it's just, there's kind of a lack of emotion about it. It would have felt out of place personally if the main characters sat around a fireside and like talked about why were they in the war.
Yeah.
Right. Like that would just kind of feel out of place. Like, and you get kind of the happenstanceness of war through it as well. I mean, Weaver, Carl Weathers' character, ended up on the plane by accident.
He was
completely in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then he ends up on the plane with them to Yugoslavia on accident. That was just one of my favorite things. Like, I don't know. Do you want to tell Barnesby that there's a random guy on this airplane? Nah, that's fine. We'll just let him fly with us.
Yep.
The film has some very funny beats in it.
Which I love. I mean, and I think that's one of my favorite things about Force 10 is the way that this film felt so believable in the story. Because, I mean, like you're talking about, there aren't as many clear story arcs and things just keep happening. And it almost feels random. But I'm like, that is exactly what life is like. And that is what war is like. And, I mean, it is a mess, and people have to improv, and people have to figure out on the fly how they're going to beat the enemy in the situation that they found themselves. And this captures it so well. There's I guess visceral would be the word, a visceral quality to some of the fights. Like, I don't know if you noticed this, but a lot of the handheld camera work during the fights was more evocative of what you'd get like in the 2000s with like a Bourne film. Like it really started to go for the chaos and the uncertainty of warfare and what war does to like an individual's mind, but then also just to a group of people and how it can ravage you emotionally and the pressure that you feel.
Yeah. Like at the end of the day, it's not about the valor of them destroying the bridge and what they had to go through. It's just about this ragtag group of people having to make ends meet through everything going wrong. So coming to the climax of the movie, Barnesby and Mallory look at each other and they're like, 20 seconds sounds about right.
Yeah.
They're thinking, all right, well, we don't have time. It's now or never. And they're just like walking, doo doo doo, and then it explodes. How did you react when you saw that?
I was just so engrossed at this point of like, I can't trust anything that's about to happen. So literally, I don't think I was breathing because I'm just like, first off, are they going to survive? Is this thing going to work out correctly? It's just when, just everything kept going wrong. And then finally, just by the time you freaking see the cracks in the dam start, I was just like, I'm crying. That water, that was not the dam. That was my eyes. That was the tears of relief and knowing something finally went right.
Oh my gosh. This was a quote we would talk about in the Lancaster household all the time, as we would say, would you expect an enormous volcano from three tiny bags of explosives? Like Edward, like his Fox's performance on that juxtaposed against like this very outward American, you know, Weaver's just going, oh my gosh, you son of a gun, blah, blah, blah. And then he's just like, would you expect an enormous volcano? It's just this very
so
posh
funny
answer. Oh yeah, yeah. We love that moment.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of like modern for the time version of the bridge on the River Kwai.
Oh gosh.
Kind of.
That's a good analogy.
Mission. Yeah. And it's like you've got just so much tension of the buildup of like, is this thing going to happen? I mean, one bridge to another, you know? And those two movies really would be a good pairing, I think. Very similar themes, very similar story beats, but then obviously you get the 70s take versus the, you know, like it's the 50s.
Oh yeah, Bridge of the River Kwai is one of my absolute favorites. It was a depressing film the first time I saw it. There's just all of these really hard POW side of the war that you really don't get all that often, which it was emotionally visceral in a different way. So I love the way that different films can kind of encapsulate these events that defined a generation.
Right.
When you think about that time period, you can't not think about World War II and how each story comes out of that. Now, even more recent, like you said, like we're getting more representation and being able to see events from different people's perspectives. I love the complexity of cinema to be able to bring you a spy film set in World War II.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's one character, the partisan leader. When he comes out, he had been downcast the entire movie. Like, he's frustrated. He's yelling at these guys. Like, why are you taking my guys? Like, everything has gone wrong, and I'm having to pay the price for it.
Yeah.
And then you see him in his bunker. He's ready to surrender, essentially, to the Nazis. And then you see him come out, and just, like, that subtle play of that face that he had.
Just amazement.
Yeah, the whole time. He's just like, y'all are idiots. Like, this is not going to happen. And then when it comes to fruition, he's able to stop the Nazi advance. Like, anybody can do anything with just a little bag of explosives. It was just really that common everyday man story, and I love that part of it.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, I absolutely love just the imagery of water and what that does. I think about just the power of seeing this scene, or even this is a little bit of a silly connection, but the two towers when the Ents break the dam to Isengard, and it's just literally washing away the enemy. There's a sense of, it's not just the satisfaction level of like when you see a battle take place on film and there's still so much just destruction and blood and everyone's battered. It's you feel the weight of that even if you won. But there's something about watching the enemy literally wash away that is cleansing, that I really appreciated about the finale of Force 10 from Navarone, and that it's not just this image of the Nazis in this particular moment being defeated, but it's a sense of the washing of the land. Like, literally, this land is being cleansed of the enemy. This land is being watered, and it's going to be refreshed and brand new. Water has such a healing property in itself, and it's so calming. And watching the fall of your enemy to water is so satisfying. And I got to the end of this movie, and I just felt so, like, optimistic and happy. And generally war movies kind of beat me up. Like, I get to the end of it and I'm like, man, that was an interesting experience. But this one, I was just like, what a ride. Like, it felt more like an adventure almost.
To close us out, I think the 60s and 70s are encapsulated by that final shot. And they're zoomed in and Mallory is just saying, before we start congratulating ourselves and et cetera, may I remind you, gentlemen, that we are on the wrong side of the river and we have a very long walk home. And you just see these tiny little figures against this huge landscape, and just how their tiny little efforts did help wash away the Germans in this moment. But now the reality is, like, many films would have ended it there. Yay, everybody won. But, like, now there's this moment where there's like, all right, well, I guess we got to walk home.
Yep.
There's no bus.
It's kind of funny. It's really humorous. I feel like that is, that was one of the places that I did laugh out loud. Just like, of course.
Any closing thoughts before we pan away and figure out how to walk home from here?
Oh, pan away like the 70s. I like it. You know, I'm just really glad that you suggested this one. I think that's the fun of the series, being able to visit films for the first time that have just flew under my radar. But I'm glad you brought it up. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. This series is going to do this a lot, and we may mention this more than once. Just that idea of, like, wait, you didn't grow up with you and your dad, you know, speaking in really bad British accents, trying to, like, quote this movie? Like, what? That didn't happen for you? Like, and we were like, oh, yeah, Harrison Ford, he was in that. Like, we talked about that more than we talked about the fact that he was in Star Wars. Like, and that's just funny to me.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, right?
I kind of love that. Yeah.
But
every family's got to have that movie. There's like something. All right. So it is time for our season 3 inaugural lightning round.
Lightning round! Woo-hoo. I think that sounded more like this, I'll be honest. Yep. That's like really meta, pulling sounds from a previous episode to then overdub on a current episode.
Yes, it's so great.
All right, I'm sorry.
So the lightning way lightning round works, so I've prepared 5 questions, and we are going to quickly give our answers, no explanation for what it is.
Go ahead.
I am very curious if we are going to sync up on any of these. So question number 1, what is your favorite one-off Harrison Ford performance?
Witness.
Ooh, that's a good one. For me, it's The Fugitive.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
very similar.
So who would you cast as Miller and Mallory in a modern Navarone film adaptation?
David Tennant and Colin Firth.
Oh my gosh, I like that. So I went a little younger. I said James McAvoy and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Ah.
Yeah,
I decided to take older characters, which I thought were fantastic, yeah. You know, in light of the fact that we're recasting old characters with other old characters.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. This one, we're probably going to agree on it. The best Guy Hamilton Bond film is?
None. I don't like Bond films. But if I were to pick one, Goldfinger would be the one.
Goldfinger. Yep. Absolutely. It's just iconic. Okay. If you could take one item with you to fight Nazis, what would it be? And why is that item a whip?
Okay, so no lie, I put Harrison Ford or his hat.
You're gonna take Harrison Ford as an item?
Yes.
Okay,
look, if you can reference Jeff Goldblum, yes, I said it in this podcast.
Okay, so I would take an iPhone with an international roaming plan.
but okay, no, there's no explanation. All right,
no. So, if you were a Bond girl, what would your name be?
Test Star.
Like, I would be Coco Pebbles. Coco is spelled like Coco Chanel.
Hold on. Steven, if you were a Bond girl, what would your name be?
Coco Pebbles.
It's just as funny the second time around. You sure you don't want to be like Count Chocula or something?
Oh, no. Cocoa Pebble. I thought about it long and hard.
So I'll be honest. That last question was the hardest one for me. I don't really want to be a Bond girl, to be honest with you.
You had to like channel your inner Shania and, man, I feel like a woman. That, yeah. Well, I'll try not to make you do this too often.
No, but I like the lightning round. The lightning round is one of my favorite things.
But absolutely.
Just don't ask me what person I'm going to be. I don't know if I'm good at that part of it.
Alrighty.
So now I know exactly what every single question is going to be for the next episode.
We're talking about the Lego movie. If you were a Bond girl, like, wait, what does this have to do?
I don't understand the cultural reference here. Why are you snapping at me? So, everybody, thank you for joining us for this episode of No Complaints. You can connect with us on Twitter at No Complaints Podcast or Instagram at No Complaints Pod, or our email address is nocomplaintspodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail with our fantastic app that we host our podcast with, anchor.fm/nocomplaints. So feel free, connect with us. We'd love to hear from you to see if you have a forgotten film that you'd love for us to add to our roster. Bowman, do you have a sponsor for this week?
We do. This week's sponsor is a really wonderful one. We're so proud for this sponsorship. This week's episode is brought to you by the Tourism Board for Norway's beautiful Harrison Fjord. Whether you like traveling solo or if you are jonesing for a family trip, Harrison Fjord has something for everyone. Enjoy a lovely dinner at the Fjorditive, An upscale diner experience that is so delicious it might just make you think about killing your wife. Or go ice skating with a pair of Blade Runners and see what lies beneath the ice, something that truly cannot be replicated. Come see Harrison Fjord. It'll make you say, I don't care. About going back to normal life, of course.
I think that's on par with Cary Grant.
I think so, too. As much as I love saying Harrison Fjord, my favorite thing is the Fjordgetist.
That's even better. Oh, my goodness. I would
pay all my euros to go eat at the Fjordgetist.
Well, this has been a fantastic inaugural episode. My cheeks are hurting. Thank you guys for diving down deep with the joy and depth of cinema. We will see you next time.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. Like, I feel like whenever you do a sponsor, it's just me laughing. It's just like, oh, it's my goodness, it's done.
I'll put a lot of references in there, too.
I only would have been more impressed if you had added a Force 10 reference in there.
I thought about it. I tried.
See the Barnes. No, I can't figure out how to incorporate
B. It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. I'll let you win this one.
Yeah, Cocoa Pebbles wins again.